Blog Talk Radio.
Radio. I'm your host, Susan Laris and Dan, and I am so happy to welcome you here today. A little bit earlier today, we keep moving this show around, and that seems to work wonderfully well. This show is all about flexibility. If you're listening to the live show, I know many of you do choose to listen to the podcast. And actually, right at the outset today, because I don't usually mention this right at the beginning, I do want to call your attention to frontierbeyondfear.com. If you are looking for archived podcasts, I'm continuing to enhance that site, and it's a great way to know what is coming up on the show. Sometimes there are things that show up there well before they're going to show up anywhere else, and just the energy around the show, and there really are some wonderful things happening. One more show note, I am so very thankful to Blog Talk Radio today for featuring the last show that we did, which was on Monday, a show I did with Larry Overman, the owner of the Ghost Mine in Oregon, who was part of that sci-fi series. That is being featured as a very high-tier Today's Best, and so I am very thankful to that. Thanks to Blog Talk Radio for seeing how we're really bringing some interesting voices into the world with this show. Now, today, I am just so happy to be welcoming back to the show Julie Tallard Johnson. Julie talked about her book the last time she was on, which is called The Zero Point Agreement, How to Be Who You Already Are. And let me tell you that Julie's work is just filled with things that we can explore. I feel there are probably several shows here just in that book alone, all different ways of actually living in a much more authentic way. Julie is a licensed psychotherapist. She is a creative writing teacher and has been doing this for quite a long while, and today we're really going to focus on that in our continuing series. We've had more than one guest on the show in the last 6 months talking about how we can write more honestly from the heart. And this is something Julie has explored very deeply. And so today we're going to talk about how we can take the concepts from the zero point, which we will, I'm sure, review again. And I do invite you to find the previous broadcast. I'll try to highlight that on frontierbeyondfear.com to make it easier to find it. But we're going to take those concepts and explore that much more deeply with respect to writing authentically. And I will honestly say that the past 18 months or so for me has been a time of doing a tremendous amount of personal writing, which I'm sure will eventually develop and is developing into some published work. But the personal aspects of this have been very important. And I have written literally several books personally in the last 18 months in terms of numbers of words. It amazes you when you really get into authentic writing. Just a little more about Julie before I bring her on. She does come from a background which is able to integrate so many different forms of spirituality, which makes her overall lesson so valuable. And yet fundamentally, it really is about simply being ourselves and overcoming the resistance that we may have to being ourselves, both in the way we live and in our writing. And she's written multiple books. She is a transpersonal counselor. She's a licensed clinical social worker. And she's been studying the scientific basis of thought transformation inspiration and creativity for 35 years. Her website, I will call attention to right at the outset, is julietallardjohnson.com, and you can see that on the show page, and I invite you to visit that later. So without delaying any further, I am just so happy to, my computer's hesitating here. Here we go. To bring Julie onto the program again. Good morning, Julie. It's so nice to have you back here.
Oh, good morning, Susan. Thanks for having me.
Well, I feel that this show today will really bring forward some concepts that we have been exploring in so many ways. And I think what I'm going to do just to start this out is to ask you, Julie, so where do we begin? We know we want to write, or maybe we don't even know yet that we want to write. I mean, that may be a question. Sometimes we may be hesitant. Where do we begin with this process?
Well, it's so interesting you start with that question, because last night I was at a local shelter for women and, children who are in abusive situations, and doing a zero-point circle, volunteer circle for them. And that's where I started. I said, well, where do we begin? Where do we begin to, with anything, really? And especially if there's been any trauma or abuse, or we're in a state of not knowing, you know, maybe who we are or what we want. Where do we begin? Yeah. Where do we begin? And so where we begin, and of course, is the zero point. I mean, and that sounds a little bit perhaps simple, but the truth is a lot of people aren't at the zero point being ourselves. And especially if we've been, you know, harmed in some way or another, we're kind of taken out of ourselves. And this culture with its busyness and intensity and a lot of trauma and drama out there also kind of takes us out of ourselves. So we, you know, we start with the zero point, and then with that, where do we begin? We begin with, you know, learning how to trust ourselves and listen to ourselves. So it's really about, and journaling and writing are one ways where we start listening to ourselves, because a lot of people have lost the capacity, or it's gone, you know, underneath in hiding. They've lost the capacity to really listen to themselves.
Yeah.
And so that's where it really, I think that's where it begins is, or I know, is that it begins with listening to ourselves and having some tools to do that. And so that leads into one of the basic tools that I share in several of my books, because it's like the good beginning point is journaling around, or just simply asking yourself, you know, living the question and asking yourself these particular questions, so you start learning how to, or relearning how to listen to yourself, is what am I thinking? You just ask yourself the question. You don't, you know, go on like a vigilante hunt or force the answer. And then you ask yourself, what am I feeling? And then you kind of notice perhaps your emotional state and your physical, you know, listening to the body and its experience in the moment helps us too to be present. And then thirdly, you ask, what do I want right now in this moment? And asking those questions and then journaling around those, you know, maybe throughout the day or at the end of the day, is something that really is a really good place to begin. So, and if we're already skillful at listening to ourselves, those still can be good questions, because certain things, sometimes our life gets a little more intense or a little bit more chaotic, and being able to breathe and go, what am I thinking right now? What thoughts am I carrying? What am I feeling right now? And what is it I want? And being able to live from those questions and, you know, again, continually practicing this listening. And I'll just say one more thing about that, since you're talking about the beginning. It can be really helpful to also carry around a little field notebook with us. I often have people take, purchase, or I give them a field notebook where they, you know, like birders go out in the field, or wildlife biologists go out in the field with their little field notebook, and they take down notes. Well, this you'll be journaling or taking little notes about, oh, this is what I'm thinking, or this is what I tend to think in this situation. But first, initially, just start with asking the questions without any, you know, necessarily any, and you might not get a response, but you will end up sooner or later getting responses. And that, again, increases that awareness of, you know, your experience, because that's where it starts. It starts with you. It starts with your experience and all that that entails. So that's a good place to begin.
Yes. Wow, there are a couple of synchronicities in what you just said that I will share.
Oh, good.
First of all, I found quite spontaneously myself doing this kind of exercise. I write every day. Even on busy mornings like today, I wrote earlier. And I was actually asking myself a series of questions and answering them in an actual dialogue.
That's a great exercise. Yeah, that's a great practice.
Because, yes, there was something I needed to work with, and I wanted to clear some of those energies before the show. And somehow I entered into that process, and it really helped. I mean, it really helped me to get to the core. I love that question, you know, what is it you really want? And that's been coming up a lot lately for me synchronistically, is that, you know, we're told in the new thought or new age communities, however you want to label it, that you can manifest your dreams, you can manifest what you want. And yet a lot of times we don't really know unless we really listen to ourselves. In fact, I think it's very often that we don't truly know. We may think we know sometimes, but we may not truly know. And that was part of my exercise this morning, rather synchronistically in a certain part of my life. And before I have you answer, I'll tell you the second synchronicity, and then I'll let you answer both, is something I have discovered. I often walk out in nature. It's something I've started doing more and more. My walks have gotten longer and longer. They're multiple miles now, like a good two minimum, maybe three, even 4 miles sometimes out in nature. And I found that my phone is useful. Although I have had people on the trail look at me like, how could you be I can see it in their eyes. How could you be messaging someone in this beautiful place? Well, I've had to tell people a couple times, Julie, not that, I mean, I hate to let people project judgment onto me, but sometimes they do. I can feel it. It's like, you know, you're standing in this gorgeous place and you're on your phone. And so I've explained to a couple people, you know, I am a writer. And I'm writing my feelings about this place. And then they're like, oh, that's really cool. And so a lot of us, when we're out, you know, we have our phone, and there's a note capability. I mean, there are different ways that you can write. And I've even called it my field notes at times because I really am out in the field, although we're always in the field in life. So anyway, those were the two things that immediately came to mind from my own personal experience very recently.
Yeah, well, somebody else brought that up the other night when I was referring to a similar exercise or using our field notebooks, and he said, well, can I use my cell phone? And I said, that's whatever works. You know, the important thing is that, you know, there are no rules. If we're really going to be exploring, you know, who we are and what we want and exploring what our experiences are, we have to, do that for ourselves in our own way and give ourselves permission. Right, not to follow the expectations of other people or or react to the judgment of other people.
That's right, and that's part of my own personal journey, is that technically I shouldn't care. You know, I should just let them look at me, and, you know, because they're interrupting my energy a little bit. So there's an example right here, you know, something I need to work with personally in my own authenticity is to not let whatever I'm projecting, I mean, they may not even really care. You know, maybe I'm projecting it onto them, this judgment that doesn't really exist. And in fact, that kind of enters into something important here is projecting judgment when we write.
Right.
You know.
Well, at the very least, it's what you're thinking. It's on your mind, you know, or it's you're on an emotional or physical level, you're experiencing somebody else's attitude or, like you said, or judgment or energy. But when I was referring to knowing what you want, you know, both all three of those, you know, checking in with your thoughts, checking in with your physical and emotional sensations, and then asking yourself what it is you want, I'm really inviting people to let go of the bigger picture of what they want and really come into the moment of what it is they want. So it can be very, very simple. It can be just, I want, you know, a Coca-Cola. Oh, I want to, you know, feel better right now, or I want, you know, to be left alone. I mean, it can be very simple things, and it usually is simpler in the moment. Which helps a lot of people with feeling stressed or overwhelmed. A lot of the women in the circle last night, you know, were dealing with, you know, a lot of overwhelm. And it's our ability to let go of the big picture, know it's there, the big picture of maybe a happier life or a house or being out of an abusive relationship or whatever it may be. We have that big picture. But in the moment, we focus on the things that are close in, things that want or ask for our attention in the moment. And,
yes.
You know, it's a great practice.
You know, you bring something up really important, is that I think, in fact, it's important in the sense that people may think it's trivial, in the sense like, you know, I'm wasting my time writing about how I'm on the trail and I'm really very thirsty or whatever, you know. And yet it's not, is it? That's part of the presence of being where you are.
Yes, and again, with your field notebook, you might just jot it down. You might just jot it down instead of, you know, writing a lot about it in terms of
exactly.
It's just getting this practice. Because, again, it's this ability to really have our experiences and be aware of our experiences in the moment and moment to moment and not have other people's, like you're giving an example, other people's judgment or any external circumstance dictate our experience. Obviously, it's going to influence it, but not for it to dictate it. But, you know, the field notebook can be used for a lot of things that helps increase awareness, and also used as a reminder to just say, okay, what is going on here? What do I perceive is going on here? And I have like 3 or 4 different field notebooks in my purse or on with me at all times. They each have a label on the outside. Like one is about my fiction, because I might have a brilliant idea about my fiction. I want to write it down. I always have a 0-point little notebook. Anything to have to do with, you know, my spiritual journey, and then maybe a blog, you know, because I write blogs. I have a blog, little field notebook. So and then I spend anywhere from an hour, sometimes to half a day, going through my little field notebooks, putting them then into either a larger journal or into my, you know, on my computer, into either the blog or the book or whatever I'm working on. And that's wonderful to do, because then all sorts of things happen when I'm moving my material from the field notebook into the, you know, article or into the book or the larger journal.
You know, that's really very helpful too. And that personally is helpful to me, because something I've been experiencing is I've been doing so much private exploration that And this is where I'm at. I feel that. And it's needed to be private for me. However, I feel this pull now to do just what you're saying. Because a lot of times when we choose to blog, for example, I will find that some of the writing I'm doing personally really has the authenticity. But if I just set out to, I have to write a blog entry today because it's been a while
and it feels
forced.
Uh-huh.
Then it's just not going to be there. I mean, and a lot of times
right.
I don't even put it out because I think, you know, this just isn't worth, I mean, it's always worth writing, but it's not necessarily something I'm
to put
called
out there.
To do. But, you know, how we take our journaling or our field notes or whatever we're writing personally and translate it to the greater world is a real question I have. And even when we feel we have these questions of, gosh, you know, this really is starting to feel like fiction, you know, that you can actually begin to see it as a basis.
Yeah.
And you think, this is an amazing story. And what I could do with it is fiction.
Mm-hmm.
But then you ask yourself the question, I'm going to hand this back to you because I know other people have had this question. You go back and forth. Is this a memoir? Or could I explore this more in fiction? And how do you really know?
Right.
Or is it
so, and that just happened to be what my blog, I do a Writing Wednesday blog, and what my blog, that's the theme of my blog today, because that is such a huge thing for a lot of writers, especially people who know, have some consciousness around that they're writing from their personal experience. And So how do we do that? And so even in the blog today, I gave Neil Gaiman as an example, his book, The Ocean at the End of the Lane, which I highly recommend for everybody. It's adult fairy tale, but it's totally based from his life, and yet what he does, what his practice is, and something he recommends people do. So as you're writing from your life, and you feel compelled to fictionalize it, which of course you can do, especially in your journal on the first few drafts, is he says, ask yourself with the what if question: what if this were to happen, or what if that were to happen? Yeah. And so you allow yourself to let the story take you where you want. As far as deciding, I think there's a stage of where you decide whether this is going to be a fiction or nonfiction, or what I love is a blend of the two. In almost all my nonfiction writing, I have fairy tales, I have stories, I have prose and things like that are not fully nonfiction. They're fiction, but that towards the end of the, you could say after you've been working on a piece for a while, at some point, it's going to be important to decide. Just decide, say, okay, this is going to be a fiction piece or this is going to be a nonfiction piece, and then write it with that. That doesn't mean you can't blend in, if it's a nonfiction piece, bring in some fiction, or if it's a fiction piece, bring in some nonfiction. But to decide, so then you can, it's kind of like having this rudder, and being able to direct where you're going to go with the story. In your journaling, the beauty is that you let yourself explore all the different possibilities, and then when you're kind of taking that bridge to, okay, I'm going to take what I've been writing in my journals, and I'm going to put it in a book, I'm going to share it somehow, or even going to put it on a blog. That on that bridge from it being private to public is when you decide which it's, you do your best to decide which it's going to be. And working that out is part of the journey, is part of the transformative process of the writer. I mean, this writing is so beautiful. You don't have to ever share your material. I mean, some writers are just, journaling. But it is such an amazing tool, remarkable tool to explore. And that's, where we kind of start with the zero point. We go back to what you were asking about, where do we begin? Well, we all begin, ideally, that's why I offer writing prompts and, different meditations that just trigger an exploration on our part. So it's always good, no matter what you're given by any teacher or guide or facilitator, is that you take what they give you and you use it to explore an idea, explore a concept, explore a story, and you explore it until you have a personal experience with it. Yeah. And then when you have a personal experience with it, it moves into some level of personal understanding. So you have a name for it, or you have some personal understanding of what this particular concept or idea or story means to you. And then you go, you decide what to do with it, like you're going to maybe write a story about it, or you're going to create some kind of spiritual practice around it. And then from that, you have this realization, you have some kind of realization and personal awakening as a result of it. But if we don't start, with exploration, if we don't start with, question, the questioning mind, the questioning attitude, that mind of an explorer, like a scientist, you're going in and exploring something, then it's really hard to move forward. It's really hard to have personal, spiritual, or creative experience. It's really hard to have personal understanding. It's really hard to generate a practice, whether it's a writing practice or a spiritual practice, from something hasn't begun with an attitude and approach of exploration. So that is fundamental. You'll find that word in all my, with my classes and when I'm working with people, and even in, the zero point agreement, I say, just take this and explore it. Let it take you where it wants to go. And then from there, you end up writing a book, or you end up, many, many things, creating a recipe, changing relationships. I mean, it's all through personal, personal experience though. Yeah.
Yes. Now, I will tell you, and this is an important area as well, I sense, is part of what I had to encounter is I went through quite a bit of trauma in my life. And I finally have gotten enough distance from the really challenging aspects of it to be able to begin to explore it. And yet, and I explored it deeper mm-hmm. and deeper and deeper. And when you've gone through something that is traumatic, my own experience of this has been that there's this feeling of writing this for me and having to really work with this and even bring up some rather challenging memories. They do come up, things that I didn't remember before. The more I write, the more I remember some things.
Mm-hmm, yes.
And then also you do start to get this feeling of, you know, gosh, you know, this really could help somebody. You know, it's not just helping me, but that I think you do begin to see how it could translate to others. And yet it does take courage. It not only takes courage for you to confront it yourself, it takes mm-hmm. courage, and not just confront it, explore.
I
love that
word. Right, right.
That's come up mm-hmm. lately. It's funny, I was just using that word yesterday mm-hmm. about being an explorer. It can be very deep. You can be exploring some pretty dark caves, you know, you're really
yes.
exploring. And yet as you're doing this, you can feel, I'm beginning to feel how I know people who've gone through all kinds of traumas related to mine, and I know that there are ways that we can help each other by exploring together. So I think that's something I'd like to talk to you about, is when you start to explore more deeply mm-hmm. a trauma that's hard to remember mm-hmm. and it starts mm-hmm. really coming to light, what do you recommend? I know that as a counselor, you may have some special things to recommend here, because we do go through a process that can be,
sure.
It asks a lot of us.
Sure. So, again, I would go back to this ability to trust whatever it is you do remember and whatever your memory is. I'm not a believer in false memory syndrome.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
That's really not, there is not such a thing. I did a whole blog on this recently, because it's like you're going to start remembering things, or you're going to start getting stories, and our brain and our mind has been trained not to trust our memory.
Yes.
Often, especially when there's trauma, because you're supposed to believe what other people's spin on the story is. We carry other people's memories. We carry other people's stories. So when we start journaling around trauma, we start hearing our own story, more of our own story.
Yes.
More, and so it's really, again, it starts with just trusting what you remember, whether it's literal or metaphorical. It's all memory. It's all, you know, memory. So that way you don't have to worry about, oh, my God, did that happen exactly how it is?
And, yeah, you do that. I'm glad you're addressing this, because you do that. You say, oh, gosh, I really want to remember this exactly, because you'd start
right.
to think
oh,
that.
Yes. Right. So
uh-huh.
it's trusting however the story comes up. Neil Gaiman's the book I just mentioned, The Ocean at the End of the Lane, he talks about this in the story. That story is also about memory and trusting your memory and how
yes.
we deal with memory, because it is a story about trauma. The protagonist deals with trauma in his life.
Yeah.
And so it's how we deal with that. And our stories are our stories. Our memories are our memories. So it's really about trusting it. And sometimes they do come up, and you go, is that really how it happened? And you just
yes,
trust
definitely.
The memory. And you work with the memory, or you explore with the memory. And it's really about loosening the grip of other people's memories or spin on, you know, our experience, and saying, this is what I remember. And
yes.
Then, of course, it's always good, depending on what the trauma is to have some kind of process to allow you to explore it in a safe and dynamic way. And that often involves, you know, with another person, whether it be a counselor
yes.
or it be friends or group, or it could be a journaling group. I mean, so it could be a lot of different places, but a place or individual that allows you to explore it in your own way, but that feels safe to you, so you can do that, so you can explore without, getting caught up in, the terror that may be there, things like that. So,
yes.
But trust goes a long way, trusting ourselves, trusting our memory, trusting our experience, trusting what we remember as our story and meaningful to us, again, is really valuable at the beginning and through the whole process of remembering trauma and transforming it again.
I will tell you what happened to me during the midst of this, without even getting, I'm not going to get into any details, and yet and I think this probably happens fairly often, is I found that at some point I had to stand outside of myself and write it as fiction. I even picked another name.
Oh, yes, thank
that
you for
this
that.
Was happening to. Other names, other
yes,
people.
Yes, that's very good.
And I wrote it like fiction.
Yeah. That is so great. That's a wonderful suggestion. And that's come up with some people, some writers that I'm working with right now who are writing about, you know, their traumatic experience. And they're the ones who are particularly going back and forth. Should I do this in fiction? Should I do it in nonfiction?
Yes.
And then I say, just keep writing it and write it both ways or whatever way you're compelled to. And sometimes they are compelled to write it in third person because that way it gives them that space and that freedom. They don't have to be in their own skin, in a sense, as they're writing it, and they can be an observer from the outside. And I'm writing a story about, you know, something that happened to somebody else, and that's a very powerful way to still be part of it, to still be in the story, but more of the observer of the story.
You know, I had something interesting happen to me while I was doing that. Is I got through, you know, some of the parts that were more traumatic. And then all of a sudden I started not wanting to use that other name. I wanted to use my name, or I wanted to use I.
Uh-huh.
And I felt that. It was an organic, natural thing. And I knew that something magical was happening at that moment. And I was stumbling upon it. You know, I didn't have, you know, all this guidance that this is what you should do necessarily. I was just going with it. And I felt that begin to happen. And it seems to be a part of my integrating what this was into who I am.
That is such a great, you know, reminder to everybody who's listening in terms of writing about trauma and difficulty.
Yes.
Because what you're saying again is that you trusted your experience. You know, again, you were exploring and just letting it come, take you where it wanted to take you. The writing took you to fiction, and then all of a sudden you found yourself using your own name. And then you're starting to have this, you know, experience and understanding about that writing. And I just think that's beautiful. And there's that trust there. If you didn't have that trust, and some people don't, when they arrive at that point, they go, oh, I don't know, this isn't right, I shouldn't do this or I should do that. It's, you know, reminding yourself that just trust the experience. Trust, just continue to let the experience, you know, it's just on paper. So let it take you wherever it wants to. And then if you find, oh, you know, this is scary, or I need to share this with somebody, or I need to, you know, I want to do something else with this, then, you know, you pursue that. But allow the writing to take you where it wants to. And so your example is a really beautiful one of that, you know, how trust comes up throughout the process.
Yes.
Trusting yourself, trusting your experience.
I will also say that I was working with someone else, and yet some of this I had to write for myself. I mean, there was someone who's experienced who was assisting me with this process. And so I wasn't alone in a vacuum doing this. However, some of it, I mean, some was alone, some of it wasn't. You know, the writing, there might be some things I was sharing and some things that I was writing for myself, or maybe I wrote a bunch of things for myself and then it took a while and then I had the courage to share it with someone who was assisting me. And so, because what happened to me, again, without getting into it now, I'm not going to, was really traumatic. I mean, it was really very, most people would consider it intensely traumatic. And so I knew the only way I could have done this was actually with the help of another person was used to helping people do this. But at the same time, there were both components where I was doing a lot of work on my own and with the other person.
Thank you for that, too, because it's a reminder, and this came up last night when I was with these women. A lot of times if it's the trauma is a result of being abused by somebody else, isolation is part of how the abuse, you know, and trauma take place. And one of my first teachers many moons ago said, you can't heal in isolation.
Ah.
And I would say the same about transformation. You can't transform difficulty in isolation. So that's what you're speaking to. And so when we're talking about writing and doing transformative work on the page, we're not talking about just on the page, are we? We're talking about using that because a lot of it's still up to us. We're still, it's up to us, you know, it falls back on us to do our own healing. But that does not mean we just do it by ourselves or just sitting down and writing, that we're part of a group or we're working with a counselor or a spiritual, you know, director or something that, because, you know, you're absolutely right. You can't heal in, you know, isolation. It has to be, we have to come together somehow. So, that's a really piece of...
Yes, I feel like the universe really helps us. I mean, it seems like our higher selves or the universe, our greater selves, however you want to identify that. For some people, it's God.
Conspires
and I'm fine
for
with
us.
That. They do. It's like the right people come into our lives at the right time to help us heal. I really believe that's true. When we're ready, when we're ready.
But also when we're more trusting, I think that this is what I'm wondering about this. I'm exploring this idea about that, is that it's when we're really, when we're trusting and when we're paying attention and we're just stepping outside of ourselves a little bit and looking around, I have a sense that it's always there. The help is always there. Mm-hmm. The people are always there. The opportunity is always there. It's when we start engaging in a more conscious way. It doesn't have to be super conscious or anything like that. Just kind of looking around and going, you know, and then, and also so following our heart. And when we start doing that, it does feel like there's a conspiracy going on, a positive conspiracy to help us fulfill what our heart desires or what we're moving towards. I just sense that, and the quantum physics points to this, that all those possibilities, all that help is always there. It's just that we're stepping into it more when we're a little more conscious, or when we say, okay, this is what I want, or this is what I'm moving towards, or this is what I'm healing, and it becomes more than part of the experience. Is the possibilities that surround us at all times become more obvious to us. I'm not really a proponent of. Matter of fact, I've seen how it's harmed people of. The law of attraction. I'm more for the law of intention. The more we have, more present we are, the more we are present in the moment and to our experiences and to ourselves and to what we want, then the more it becomes available to us, all that which is probably already there. And I'm thinking out loud because I'm exploring this myself. You know, I see some people who it looks like their possibilities are so limited and such, and it's like, okay, what's the difference there between that person right now and me, where I feel my possibilities are really vast, or things, there's a lot of synchronicities. What's going on in my life when a lot of synchronicities are occurring in a time in my life when it's not? And so I'm not 100% sure about the readiness piece, because that sometimes implies that we're doing something wrong, when I think really what it's about is just that it's all going on. Whatever it is that's helping us is always helping us. It's a lot of times it's behind the scenes. But when we kind of tune in a little bit more, or maybe this, it's just a timing thing. It's not so much a readiness, but a timing thing. Then all of a sudden a little more synchronicity, a little more movement happens. And, you know, and like I said, I'm not sure. Part of it's the great mystery.
I actually kind of like this idea, is that it's as if the resources are always available, and it's your awareness of them and the connections and whatever, even including synchronicities that occur.
Yes.
If we could begin to believe they were always there our entire lives, it's just, and sometimes we can think of examples. I know I can, when my life was much less synchronistic, I can still think of examples where synchronicity occurred. I didn't know how to label
right.
it.
Right,
But it happened, and you realize it goes all the way back. But, you know, something else that, well, a couple of things. You really are giving me, really helping me to think this morning, because I have been known to very honestly question the law of attraction. I have done it before. I feel that it's not.
Oh, bless you.
Oh, for myself. You know why? Because it's really easy to become terrified of it and to use it as a form of judgment.
Exactly. A lot of people don't experience this positive, you know, experience of things coming into their life. They don't get the whatever it is they want, and they feel like they're really messed up.
Like they're doing
they're applying
something wrong.
The law of attraction. Yes, so it really, you know, makes them feel that way even more so. So, yeah, I And plus, I tend to follow the Buddhist path, and a lot of times the law of attraction ignites that grasping and that, you know, wanting to the negative kind of wanting, the have to have it, or this, you know, and for all the focus on getting something, not the experience, but getting something, and it's that just causes more suffering. So, I think
we can get really caught up in the suffering. That's exactly it. And I've known a lot of people where it seems like they're doing all the right things, you know, all the right things in quotes, you know, when it comes to what should allow you to manifest. And yet it's not happening in some way. And then they get frustrated, like, what am I doing wrong? And I'll tell you, Julie, I came from a fundamentalist background in a Christian sense. And to me, it has become another form of fundamentalism. And I see fundamentalism, and I'm not saying this to be judgmental. I'm saying this so that we can free ourselves from all forms of absolute ways of thinking, which is fundamentalism, is that I think that people know deep down, like if I look at my traumatic experiences, I would not be here today on this show. No, I mean, it was pivotal. The work that I'm doing now would never have come into being if not for some of those traumas. And yet, at the time, I mean, it was really challenging. And so, and I know that people gloss over this all the time. They say, oh, you know, your most traumatic experience is a gift. And you can say that, but to really begin to see it is to unravel the way that we understand the law of attraction. Because if challenges in life truly are a gift, then you are essentially bringing yourself through a journey that's going to take you where you need to go. And I'm coming to terms with it too, Julie. It's something I work with all the time. I've even had experiences where I got really upset with the law of attraction and blogged openly, and then people got upset with me. Like, you know, you're not stating the party line. Hey, that's just fundamentalism again.
Right,
I mean,
exactly.
What did I grow up with? You know, this
right, and
is
we find that in every.
True.
Yeah, we can find that everywhere, the dogma.
Yes,
you know, so,
and yes. What is real? Mm-hmm. That's what I want to know. What is real? What does our life truly reveal? And I think that's what you're all about. And I think that having ambiguity, both of us have it. I feel that in this area, how to explain it. That's okay, too. Do we have to know exactly? It's really very subtle to truly understand how this actually works.
Right, and not giving over that question of, you know, what's real to anybody else, and allowing ourselves to both explore and then experience for ourselves and make meaning for ourselves what is real.
Yeah.
You know, because there are a lot of people out there who want to tell you what's real and what's not. And you lose a lot of this life experience when you give that over to somebody else, in my view.
Yes. And you know, just not to go too far with this, but there's another area where I feel that sometimes it can come across as cold and not compassionate if we're in the new thought community or the whatever circle that is, and somebody's going through a hard time, and the only thing that their friends are telling them is, oh, you know, you're not thinking the right way, or it just is so surface level. And then that can leave that person totally isolated. Not only are they going through a trauma, they are now isolated from all of their friends because they're not doing things the right way and their friends just want to lecture them.
Be implying or saying that they somehow attracted this to them.
Yes.
And of course
say it. Yes.
Yeah, I know. It's just horrible. My heart breaks when I hear that because it's like, you had this experience, that's true, and how you respond to it is going to be up to you. But that it happened, like this isn't that traumatic, but I give the example of a tree falling on your house, you know. It's like, you can have a very different experience, but people can say, oh, you know, that was my fault. You know, what have I done? What's the spiritual message and all that? And
you
know, sometimes a tree just falls on your house. But it's actually not as important as what you're going to do with it, with the experience, you know, than it is of, you know, what was the cause of it or when bad things happen kind of thing.
Yes. Well, as usual,
I was going to say
branching out from the writing topic, but I'm not at all surprised.
And one of the great exercises to do in response to some of the questions you asked earlier is to, I don't know, Parker Palmer talked about this in his talk. He refers to a lot in his books and sometimes on his other interviews is reframing. Being able to reframe our experiences, because we often go into different experiences with a real habitual mindset or a storyline that we just, you know, we're not even conscious of. And both in my book, in the Zero Point book, I bring up the practice of remything, you know, rewriting our stories. And in all my circles, what I have people do is write a nonfiction piece, write a memory about, you know, a childhood memory, and I'll give some kind of prompt, like write the first time you felt put down, or write the first time you felt complimented. So I'll give often it will be a negative experience because we're going to be reframing it, but I'll say write about this particular experience, and then they'll just write about it. And then I'll say, okay, we're going to rewrite that story. You're going to fictionalize it, and a lot of times I'll give certain prompts to, you know, bring in a hero or have it end where have it the opposite. What would be the opposite ending in this situation? Or have something show up that detours that story and creates another whole story. And the interesting thing, or sometimes just simply rewrite it so it all works out and everything is, you know, happy basically.
Yes,
and when they do that, things are happening in the, you know, in the brain. You're creating new pathways. Journaling is a very powerful tool to help with the transformative process actually set in our, you know, psychophysical system. The actual writing, it's good to write in a journal with our hand. So when we're rewriting a story or remything or we're reframing something and we're writing it in our journal, that actually allows for those pathways to start happening in the brain. As research has recently showed, our brains are, you know, flexible and changeable. It doesn't feel like they are sometimes because we're so habitual, but writing, journaling, has been an established way to help us with the healing process from trauma or any transformational process or even just the creative process. If we're wanting to come up with more creative ideas or we want to handle a situation differently, another practice that I give in several of my books because I just love it, it's borrowed from cognitive behavioral therapies. I know that The Secret or that group claim it as theirs, but it's totally borrowed from cognitive behavioral therapy is scripting, where you script, where before you go into a scene, it's used in cognitive behavioral therapy, particularly for anxiety and disorders, depression and anxiety. So before you go into a scene that has typically been negative, you can rewrite it. You rewrite it as a positive experience, like you're writing a scene in a play or a movie, and you include the other characters. You know, you focus on how you're going to be feeling, what you're going to be thinking and what you want to have happen, but you include the response, you include the environment, what's happening in the environment, and you script it. And that has, research has shown, you know, evidence has shown that then when you step into that scene, it is improved upon greatly, I mean, in some cases. Because, again, that's the zero point. You are the main character. In every scene you're in, you are the main character. Everybody is the main character in that scene from their own place. But so you have a huge influence on what's going to happen and even a bigger influence on your own personal experience in that scene. So scripting is a wonderful tool. I use it, you know, all the time. Sometimes just to help me manifest, you know, help me visualize something. But the actual writing of it, the actual scripting of it really strengthens the potentiality and the possibility of that happening. You could say it creates room for more possibility for that to happen.
Yes. What if someone's experiencing depression, Julie? Can writing, I mean, sometimes when you're really depressed, perhaps you don't want to do anything, including mm-hmm. any kind of journaling, but have right. you worked with people who are in the midst of depression using writing as a tool?
Yes. And in particular, then, with the two things that are important with if you're working with depression is to have writing prompts or have some kind of writing process so you're not just
yes.
sitting down and just writing, you know, about the depression or from the depression, but you're exploring
yes.
the depression and other possibilities through writing. So, you know, for example, I give writing prompts. Or you might even pick a spiritual book, you know, The Zero Point Agreement or some book that you really resonate with and create writing prompts. Some other books have these too, have writing prompts in them, like my books have journaling prompts in them. And so you take that book that you're working with and you use that to write from. Don't just totally free write, because that
yes.
can, like you know, implying that can just kind of strengthen the depression. So that's the one
uh-huh.
thing. Have a process that you're actually journaling with. And then the other piece is don't do it in isolation. You know, either, you know, be part of a group or part of, you know, be with a spiritual teacher or a therapist where you're, you know, you're working through the, and with the depression.
Yeah.
All of Parker Palmer's books, I mean,
I know.
Even Healing the Heart of Democracy, he, you know, he's upfront about his depression.
Very.
He talks about how writing, both his books and just writing at home, writing poetry. Poetry is a great thing to do when you're depressed.
Yes. Yes.
And one reason that is because not only are you working through some things, but you're also when you're done with the poem. I love writing poetry because I've accomplished something, and that sense of accomplishment is a good medicine. You know, a good antidote to the depression, the feeling
yeah.
of, oh, I am doing something, I am figuring things out. So, but in his books, in the Hidden Wholeness is a wonderful book, is he, you know, refers to his depression and how writing is central to his life. He
yeah.
even mentions in the Healing the Heart of Democracy and in some of his other work that he came out, I think, I think it was a 7-year depression. That book helped him, having to write that book and bring it out to the world, thank goodness, is part of what helped him through his depression. So that's that part of, you know, not just writing for ourselves, but writing, you know, for others, whether it's to share in a book or share a poem with a friend. You know,
yeah.
I talk about that in the zero point, living life in the open. Don't just
yeah.
do it all by yourself in your room. Take it out and share it with, you know, either one or hundreds of other people.
Yes, yes. And I will say that when Parker was on this show, he very honestly explored his depression, and he talked about how, you know, it can go to tremendous extremes. Have you had people who are writing, I mean, since we're talking about depression,
mm-hmm.
who found themselves in real distress, like, oh my gosh, you know, I really don't want to go on, you know, or as they're writing,
yes.
you know, that
yes.
they begin to explore just how deeply, you know, how deep it goes. And
yes.
as a counselor,
absolutely.
I imagine, you know, you certainly would respond to that in some way, but I'll let you answer that. If someone is writing and they do find their depression has a voice and they can't seem to get away from that voice and it's going deeper and deeper and it's in very real distress, even in life-threatening ways, like what Parker talked about, what do you suggest? Because so often people might be writing for themselves and not have the courage to reach out to somebody.
Well, so it is about reaching out. It is about staying in contact with other caring and present
yes.
human beings. And so don't do this alone. I mean, it's
yes.
so it's like depression is usually mixed in with isolation and shame. You know,
yes.
shame is usually there. So it's like in shame, depression breed in isolation. So
uh-huh.
no matter what our experience, in whatever level of depression we're experiencing, in touching on in our writing perhaps, is to not be alone with it.
Yeah.
That's like very, very important. And it's
yeah.
and not even just seeing a counselor once a week or is probably enough. It's really about not isolating in your day-to-day life. pushing yourself a little bit to be out with people who see you, who hear you, who, you know, and love you, care about you, like-minded people.
Yeah.
That's really important. And sometimes you just have to stop. Sometimes you have to stop what you're doing. If you're, you know, the writing itself, you know, taking a break, taking a holiday, and just in nature, of course, is like one of the things, one of the 11 core principles of the zero point is rely on nature. You were talking about that in the beginning. It's like if everything else isn't working, just make sure you get outside. be in nature. And if you're in the city, if you can find a park, that natural light, the natural rhythm of the, you know, of nature, of, you know, wildlife is so, such strong medicine. Such strong medicine.
Yes. Oh, I so agree. And it's phenomenally
also remember
transformative.
Remembering it's not really about figuring something out. There's nothing like, no, because there's no one answer to anything. And so it's just about exploring. And if your exploring is taking you to a really dark place, then you might be you might want to change what you're exploring for a while, you know. So, but definitely get out and get outside. When all else fails, especially.
Yes,
take your phone
with
you if you want.
I so agree. And, you know, sometimes people don't realize until they've actually done it just how transformative that can be. Because, you know, you hear it and it's like, ah, you know, I don't want to get out or whatever. And I'll tell you, it really does. It really does help. I highly recommend it to people as well. And it tends to, you know, bringing this back to a little bit lighter place, I suppose, and we are getting close to the end of the show. I think that getting out in nature, and you speak to this, it helps us in so many different ways, no matter what our state of mind. If we're joyous, we become more joyous. I mean, it feeds, it just elevates us and makes us more creative in so many ways.
I so agree. I so appreciate that. Yep.
Well, we are nearing the end of the show. This conversation has been just wonderful, so wide-ranging. I enjoyed it.
Me too.
And I want to give you the opportunity. First, let me say thank you, but I want to give you the opportunity to talk a little bit about anything that you have coming up and where people can find you, Julie. And, yes, from my heart, just sincere gratitude to have you back on the show here.
Oh, thank you. I love being in conversation with you. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
So one thing, they can go to my website and they'll see my my two blogs. I have a Zero Point blog and I have a Writing Wednesday blog that goes out every Wednesday. So if that's something that interests them, and it includes writing prompts and things like that. And then I also am offering my first online class that people can sign up for, and it's called In the Spirit of Writing. And it's a lot about what we talked about today. And it particularly helps writers, but it can be for anybody who wants to explore through writing. And we do use the Zero Point book a little bit with that. And you can sign up and you have a year to go through it. And it's personal one-on-one attention with me. And we also have a group contact and a group Facebook page that's just for people who are in this class. So you can do that from anywhere. So those are...
Well, wonderful.
Check those out.
Yeah, well, it seems like you have a lot of resources out there for people, and so I really do invite people to go to your website, which is julietallardjohnson.com, and also to explore your book, because it has, I imagine I'll bring you on again soon, and we will explore more some other aspects of the Zero Point Agreement, because it covers basically all the areas of your life, and I feel like we've only brushed the surface. So
that'd be wonderful.
Oh, that would be great. So thank you again, Julie. It's been a real pleasure to have you on.
Same here.
You take care. You have a wonderful afternoon where you're at.
All right. Yes.
Thanks so much.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Just a quick show note as the live show ends. The next show, we have a lot of shows coming up. I'm increasing the frequency of the program as much as I can manage in my schedule. Friday, May 23rd at 9 a.m. Pacific, or wait, no, 12 p.m. Pacific, 3 p.m. Eastern, Philip Goldberg, the author of American Veda, From Emerson and the Beatles to Yoga and Meditation, How Indian Spirituality Changed the West. And Philip is the author of many, many books in spirituality. He's very well known. He's even been on the Today Show. So it's wonderful to have him coming to the Frontier Beyond Fear. He is a very insightful, wonderfully compassionate soul. So I know we'll enjoy talking to Philip Goldberg. And that, again, is Friday, May 23rd at 12 p.m. Pacific, 3 p.m. Eastern. And you can once again learn all about this show at frontierbeyondfear.com. This is a listener-supported show. You can learn how to support the broadcast there, whether energetically or other ways. Again, frontierbeyondfear.com. And we're now going to the podcast, but I'm going to add just a couple more notes for people. I do invite you to come interact with me both on Facebook and on Twitter. The show is just really getting a place on Facebook. I basically started on Twitter. On Twitter, you can find me under Susan Laris and Dans if you just look for me. And I'm also continuing to develop the Facebook presence for the show. And so I invite you to come over to Facebook so that we can inject some more energy into that area as well. And you can find the show simply under the Frontier Beyond Fear on Facebook. And if you're able to see the show page, both the Twitter and the Facebook pages are readily available. So I do invite you to be part of the community, and I invite interaction. I'd love to see more of that, and we've had many guests on the show that I sense would be happy to interact with you as well, if we could really get a community spirit going. So I invite you there. And with that said, I hope that today has really helped you to reflect upon how you can be an explorer. I love that word, explore, and it has come up personally for me recently. To be an explorer and to put yourself in the energy of your writing and explore. We've had other guests on the show recently. I invite you to explore those shows. Alan G. Hunter, he is a memoir expert, has written many books, and we talked about this with him. I invite you to explore his shows. Mark David Gerson, another person who has invited us to explore in our writing. And so, and then, of course, today's guest, Julie Tallard Johnson. And I welcome you to go to her website because there are just so many resources there and classes and things that are coming into being that will be of great assistance to you. So thank you again for being here, everyone. And may you find that spirit of the explorer on your path today, wherever this show finds you. ¶¶